Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. I welcome you to this April 4th edition of Vantage Point, the April 4th memorial of the martyrdom of Dr. Martin Luther King edition of Vantage Point. Here on 99.5 FM, that's WBAI, on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. That's right, the York College Internet Radio community is plugged in to listen to and participate in this program here on WBAI. Well, today, our very special guest we anticipate hearing from very shortly is the Honorable Roz J. Baraka, who will be presenting his segment, as always, the first of every month, our State of Newark Report. So we hope the mayor will be able to join us. But I also just want to, in acknowledging the segment that just played about Dr. Martin Luther King, just remind us that, yes, this is the day that Dr. Martin Luther King was martyred, was assassinated 54 years ago. It is also the day that 55 years ago, he delivered one of the most iconic and influential and impactful speeches in the history of these United States of America, a speech entitled Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break Silence. And I had the privilege of being with a number of people, most notably Bishop Herbert Daughtry and his daughter, Bishop Leah Daughtry, yesterday at the historic Riverside Church, where this was acknowledged, both the assassination, but as well the speech. And I had the privilege of joining any number of people, over maybe 20 people, in reading sections of that historic speech yesterday at the Riverside Church. And the last speaker, the last presenter, was none other than Bernice King, Reverend Bernice King, Dr. King's daughter. So on this day, we should remember the life and legacy, sacrifice, and of course, the extraordinary achievements of Dr. Martin Luther King. Also in that vein, POP, the People's Organization for Progress, will of course be organizing a major millions persons march, assembling this afternoon to march for voting rights, economic justice, and peace. And of course, that's headed up by Larry Hamm, one of the great organizers of our time, consistently on the case, if you will. And we encourage people to join in that demonstration, which I think begins around 5 o'clock this afternoon. But you can go to POP, Google POP, and I'm sure it will pop up with the specific information. Also want to let you know that this evening, the Honorable Roz J. Baraka, who will be joining us soon, will also be hosting a virtual town hall meeting on gentrification. Gentrification, a crisis in Black America. And we say it is a crisis without urgency, a state of emergency without urgency. And so we want to address this issue of Black communities disappearing, of Black people and Black culture being displaced, whether it be Harlem, whether it be Brooklyn, Bronx, wherever you go. We find Black communities being decimated. So we'll have spokespersons coming to greet you. Mark Morial will have some words of on this issue. The president and CEO of the National Urban League will be joining us. We have representatives from 5 cities, including Newark, but also from Seattle, Washington, from Los Angeles, California, Houston, Texas, and also we'll have a representative from Durham, North Carolina, all of these talking about what is going on in their community. So go to a lot today. Go to IBW21.org. That's the numeral, 21. IBW21.org. And you can see the promo for it, and you'll be able to sign up, and you'll be able to actually participate. And we encourage you to do so. It is going to be powerful in terms of looking at this issue, and we're going to be people will be joining from all over the country, and we're going to be encouraging people to join the fight against gentrification. It doesn't have quite the same priority that it once had. We're not talking about it, but it is eating up black communities. And I guess to some degree, sometimes we sort of acquiesce to that reality. So once again, this evening at 7 o'clock p.m. sharp, a virtual national town hall meeting, again, hosted by the Honorable Roz J. Baraka and with a special guest, President Mark Morial of the National Urban League. And again, we will have many studies. We will have vignettes of what is going on around gentrification and the need to address it from five different cities from all across the country. And that's it this evening. Go to IBW21.org. That's the numeral, IBW21.org, 7 o'clock p.m. sharp this evening. We're now joined by our mayor, the Honorable Roz J. Baraka, and we want to welcome him once again to Vantage Point. Mayor Baraka, welcome.
Hey, good morning. How you doing? Good afternoon. Sorry about
we're
that.
We're doing well, Mayor Baraka. Let me just first and foremost congratulate you on an exhilarating, inspiring, informational State of Newark address. I was privileged to be able to be there with just the hundreds, I mean, really thousands of people, grassroots community-based organizations, lots of young people, mayors, elected officials for this incredible, incredible event. And we want to have you dive in and talk about the whole concept of Newark Forward. That's right. I heard it over and over again, Newark Forward. And we want to talk about that. But before we do that, this is the 55th anniversary of Martin Luther King's Vietnam speech, Beyond Vietnam speech at the Riverside Church, and the martyrdom, his assassination 54 years ago. And I'm just wondering whether you'd offer your thoughts on the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King and its relevance to these times.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think Martin Luther King was a giant, in this history, not only in just African-American history, the history in this country, and a fight for more democracy and inclusion, here in America, to fight to make sure that the words that were written on the Constitution apply to African Americans, and the things that he fought for and stood for, the courage that he had was remarkable. And I think later on in my life, you began to get a greater respect for the struggle that Martin Luther King had and led in this country, with incredible opposition at a time when he was not very popular nationally. Now everybody celebrates King, and there's all kinds of things with King, but when he was alive, all these people were not by his side. Even fellow ministers, separated themselves from it, particularly, when he began talking about Vietnam and the other America and his foray into northern cities. Was not as popular as organizing civil rights in the South, and that wasn't wildly popular either. But, he's just have a lot of respect for him. And, even now today, some of the things that he struggled for, they're being rolled back. Right. Fight for voting rights, being rolled back. Right. our struggles, for opportunities to get rid of segregation. We still, our school systems are still highly segregated. More than 70% of African Americans still go to school with other African Americans solely, and they're segregated by race and class in this country. So many of the things that King talked about, we're still struggling to get, and some of them we're struggling to keep in this very retrograde period that we're in, very backward and dangerous time that we're in. Which means that we have to be more sophisticated and more organized and more prepared to unite than any other time. And the forces that are keeping us from uniting are becoming more and more prevalent, not only in the superstructure and ruling class, but amongst ourselves. The forces that keep us from uniting have become more pronounced, and we just really have to fight that trend.
Right. One of the things that Dr. King fought for that some people don't recognize and recall, and I always have to remind them, is his fight for a economic bill of rights, which included a guaranteed annual income. And that is something that has been revived. And certainly I'm aware, Mayor Baraka, that you and your administration are moving forward with universal basic income in the city of Newark as well. And let me just also comment, I had the honor of participating in a program yesterday, and I was shocked. You always learn things. Speaking about being alienated, I didn't realize that even Dr. King's board of directors, the board, was almost unanimously voted against it, except for one person, the Reverend Dr. Otis Moss, whom I happen to know from and have worked with over the years. He was the only one who supported him. So King really took a hell of a beating, was really isolated when he took that particular choice. So again, it is good to reflect on
absolutely. Yep. And even in the North, people didn't understand, you know, the struggles that he was, you know, fighting for. They came up there, he got a cold kind of response from folks. So, I mean, and I guess later you understand, you know, how much of a giant he was, you know, to the struggles for democracy in this country.
Right. Well, Mayor, there were so many highlights to your State of Newark address. It was just such an incredible event, and I hope people are able to go to Newark Television or wherever. I'm sure you'll tell people where they can still see it, because people need to see this and experience it. And I was there live and in person and really, really appreciated it. But one of the highlights was that one dramatic moment, I guess near the, I don't know what part of the speech, but you thrust into the air a lead pipe. And you declared victory over, you know, the whole question of the I'm going to use the term infestation of lead pipes that have, you know, been poisoning and retarding and harming people in Newark for so many years. And I just noticed here, I'm looking at a press release which says Newark wins National Environmental Award for Spectacular Improvement on Water Delivery System. Mr. Mayor, just talk about that moment. How insignificant is that achievement?
It's tremendous for us. You know, everybody else has been celebrating. We've been celebrating with them. We celebrated with the Vice President of the United States. We celebrated with national environmental groups, with water groups all over the country. We're getting calls from people internationally. But I didn't get a chance to celebrate with the actual people of Newark who had to endure and go through all of this, right? And so the State of the City was my opportunity to do that, to celebrate with the families of Newark and the people that were there who helped us in those difficult times, whether it was passing out filters or helping us get signatures to get people's lead service lines before we passed the law that we could go on a property and change it anyway. All of those things. And I wanted to be able to thank them and say, you know, we endured some tough times. People mocked us, and now they're modeling us. You know, as I said, you know, some storms don't come to stay. They come to pass. And so at the end of the day, it's just a great victory for the people of Newark and for some of the folks that worked on this who were getting really land blasted. Like, you know, our water director, water and sewer director, Kareem Adeen, you know, who was being taken through the mill at that time. You know, what he did was remarkable, organizing the city's largest public work project in decades and getting it done before time, ahead of schedule, you know, and taking care of local residents, subcontracting, minority businesses. Now some of them are primes, giving them opportunity to make a ton of money and to be able to do that without, you know, wasting or missing any of the dollars that was raised.
Right. Absolutely. Mayor Baraka, one of the things that you did in your very powerful, eloquent, inspirational, and informative speech, you had recurring themes. One of them was Newark proud. I mean, you sort of, and that was not necessarily new, but you stressed that. You seem to be, you know, saying to people, looking at people in a very uplifting way, having people to understand, you know, to be proud of Newark, but you express it by saying Newark proud. And then repeatedly in your speech, you cited an accomplishment and you would close by saying Newark forward. Why did you select these themes in terms of your State of Newark address?
Well, one, I mean, you know, a publisher and good friend of mine here in Newark, John Blassingame, says, if you begin to change the way you look at things, the things you look at begin to change. Mm. So we just have to be proud of where we come from and the things that we've done and what we've accomplished. Like, we're not there, but we have to be proud of the journey that we've traveled. And if you're not proud or look up with some kind of encouragement and conviction about what's happening in your own city, in your own community, then nobody else will. So we have to be proud of that. And Newark forward, meaning, you know, that we borrow from Kwame Nkrumah, you know, forward, ever, backwards, never.
Right.
You know, we want to continue to march forward. And this is evidence and proof. Every time we move forward, we have to pronounce the fact that we moving forward and we moved forward, right? And be opposed to backwards motion.
Right.
And that's what we want to see, and we want to highlight that and show people that, you know, that the city is, in fact, moving forward.
Well, and I guess, you know, again, one of the advantages of being, having been around a while is I can remember, and you talked about what Newark used to be and how people used to talk about Newark. And, you know, it was like this, like they say about Cleveland, the snake by the lake. And, of course, I'm from out in Ohio, and, of course, they're going through changes. But Newark was always being denigrated. It was always like this terrible place. And then the rebellion and insurrection, but the spectacular development since that time is certainly something that people need to appreciate. And I always tell people that Reverend Jesse Jackson has this phrase that people don't quite understand. He talks about keep hope alive. And what he really means by that is that sort of reform and revolutionary movements or movements for change do not occur when people are depressed, repressed, or lack hope or lack optimism. That really it is a hopeful people who really move forward. And when you say, you know, Newark proud and Newark forward, it seems that that's a part of that sparking, that sense of keep hope alive. And one of the areas that I found so moving was the person who was in charge of homelessness. And the sister got up and she testified, and you could just see how impacted she was been. Because people discount homeless people. They don't treat homeless people. And I'm guilty to some extent myself. You know, there's a way in which people are in the margins. But she was impressed with the fact that you took serious the charge and that have put together a program that genuinely, she believes, respects homeless people and creates a pathway towards bringing them back into normalcy in the sense of like treatment and getting them into housing and so forth. So speak to us about that program, because this sister was really very powerfully moved by this program.
Yeah, well, it's the office, the homeless services. We converted it. We created a homelessness czar, and then we created the office because usually it's dealt with by the county. The city decided to invest in it. I think she was a great part of that because she made us begin to look at it differently. We began to call them residents without addresses, you know. She talked about how people like to take care of folks on the street, and it made them feel good and not necessarily fix the problem of homelessness. And our job is to make sure people are not living on the street, or they don't have to live on the street, that it's inhumane to live on the street, and that we had to do everything to pull people off of that, whether it's building a new shelter that was a low-barrier shelter, so that would take people that other people won't take, and it's safer, so people feel comfortable about getting there, about being in there. We get more people off the street and building other opportunities like container villages, you know. And we built one already, and we're building two more now, and an additional one for next year. So we'll have four in a little over a year in the city that we've built. Downtown by Penn Station, a drop-in center. You know, all of these things that we're doing, basically from her vision and our support and understanding that this is a problem that we can't leave to other people. We need to engage in it. And then you got other municipalities that spend money to move homeless people out of their city into other places. And we don't take that posture. We've decided to invest in it and be hands-on, in terms of the outcomes of our residents with our addresses, and just not leave it to the county and other folks to deal with.
Right. Yes, it was very, very, very impressive. And I hope people sort of can grasp the way of thinking about this, looking at it differently and responding and listening and hearing the people. And because certainly across the country, this is an issue that needs to be addressed. I mean, you can't go anywhere today I was in D.C. a couple of days ago, and people in parks and other places, you see homeless people up under bridges. I mean, it's all over the country. This is an issue that, speaking of Dr. King, I mean, goodness gracious, here we are 55 years later, and we're still talking about homelessness and hunger and not resolving these issues, and yet, you know, being instantly be able to find, you know, millions and millions, if not billions of dollars for war, even if, you know, the war, even though in some ways that may be necessary in some ways, but the necessity of defending people against hunger, poverty, and disease still seems to be taking a back seat. Mayor Baraka, the other thing that was from the first young person, I don't know, 6, 7 years old, who came out and did a reading, one of your former students who came forward and just testified about you as a principal, who's gone on to just achieve so much in life, and even then the various programs you outlined, and then that incredible closing, you know, where you just brought the future together, just all of these young people from various ethnicities and backgrounds and so forth. And I would just like to have you sort of comment about that. Obviously, this is something you care about. Are passionate about the participation of young people, and I guess it's sort of an easy question, but why your prioritization of this in terms of your tenure as mayor? You obviously spoke strongly about the necessity for engaging and seeing the growth and development of young people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it sounds cliche-ish, but the young people are, scientifically going to be here longer than we are, and we have to leave them something that they can use and work with and move forward. And our job in preparing them begins now. And then if we take a look at what the future of Newark looks like, and the future of this state, by the way, looks like based on the census documents, the future of New Jersey is people of color, you know. And so we have to prepare them and ready them for that eventuality, and prepare them for what's happening in this country, because the more people begin to realize that, the more dangerous things are going to become. And, we need to take a look at what's happening in Newark, you know, democratically, that we count all of our residents and all of our folks, no matter their language, their place of origin, all of these things. And we look at that as a strength to our city. And our young people, you know, if you just take a look at it, you can see. And that was the object of it, so people can see for themselves what the city looks like outside of their own enclaves that people find themselves in.
Right. Well, it was very, very powerful, and it was just the musicians, the poetry, and so well woven into the mix. One of the things I just wanted to just mention, too, that I was sort of on my wish list as I would come back and forth to Newark, and it was also mentioned, because I think these transformations can also be just so powerful in terms of changing the images of cities, but also jobs and a number of other things. And that's train stations. You know, the Union Station in Washington, D.C., for example, has just been transformed into just much more than a train station. And then you made the announcement that the train station in Newark is getting ready to get an overhaul. Man, I said, hallelujah.
Yeah. That's a great thing, and we've been looking forward to that. I think it's just going to really change the trajectory of what's happening here even further. So we're excited about it. You know, it's long overdue. A lot of times it wasn't invested in because of political reasons. If Penn Station was in another municipality in New Jersey, it would have been invested in and taken care of, you know. But that aside, I'm glad that this is happening now.
Right, right. Well, finally, the Institute of the Black World 21st Century tonight is convening a major national town hall meeting on gentrification, state of emergency without urgency. And of course, here in WBAI, they hosted the town hall meeting in 2019, where we gathered in Newark from all across the country. And we were not able to follow up because of COVID in part, but also because of just resources that were not available to us. But we are relaunching, so to speak, with this town hall meeting this evening. And we're delighted that you've agreed to host us again. Mark Morial, president and CEO of the Urban League, is are going to be participating, as well as representatives of different cities from across the country. And so I'm just wondering whether you would just speak to the importance of addressing, as your administration has and is, this critical issue of gentrification.
I mean, it's incredibly important. We see what has happened around the country, particularly as homelessness and, you know, the housing crisis looms and continues to grow, increase in rents and how it's expediting. We need to have a response and a plan as that stuff happens, as market forces raise the prices around the country. We have to have very deliberate and intentional kind of strategies to mitigate this for working people and poor people in these cities. One is, in terms of creating and a sense of urgency around building affordable housing, but also a sense of urgency about giving people livable wages and increasing people's wages so they can afford or be in tune with the rising costs of housing. You know, many people are paying more than 30-40% of their income on housing, which puts an undue burden on them. And so it just has to be addressed.
Well, Mayor Baraka, you've done a great deal already, and you don't seem to be no ways tired. You seem to be energized. So I guess I want to close by saying, what's next for the Honorable Raj J. Baraka?
Well, we're going to stay at it, man. You know, I got an election coming up. You know, we prayerfully get another term to continue to doing what we've been doing. And we turn it up a notch this term here. And, in the middle of that, I'll figure out, you know, what it is I want to do.
Right. Well, you have done an incredible job so far. I was looking at the other day some images of your mother and father, an image with you standing with them. I'm sure they are so proud, as all of us are, of the work that you've done. And again, it's not sentimental. It is because of the policies and exemplifying it and setting a model. And as you talk about it, as you were sharing with the audience, it's not perfect. That people have to be engaged in perfecting that which is imperfect and fulfilling that which is unfulfilled. It's not a spectator proposition. So you say Newark forward, Newark proud. I will never, ever forget your initial campaign slogan, "When I become mayor, we become mayor." And you have never, ever ceased to make that a reality. So Mayor Baraka, thank you so much for joining us the first of every month. And we look forward to your comments this evening on our national town hall meeting.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. That's the Honorable Raj J. Baraka. And again, we hope you appreciate. I hope that I should have. But you can go to Newark TV, I think. I think you can just Google Newark TV. And I'm sure that they actually recorded his State of Newark report, and it's not long. It's not like some 4 or 5 hour oration. It's, you know, maybe 20 minutes, his address itself. The overall program was not even very long either, maybe an hour and 15 minutes. But it was spectacular. It was inspirational. It was the art and the culture, and it was just such an incredibly powerful program. So we now want to turn to our listening audience. Your turn to, as the professor goes up on the soapbox, to entertain and hear your perspectives on four particular questions that I want to pose to our audience as you call in 212-209-2877. And I do hope you're able to get in. We have had some people have saying we need to work on our phone system. It may not be the phone system. Maybe people just aren't calling in at the right time or whatever, but we hope people are able to get through. 212-209-2877. And I would like for people to give your reflections and remembrances of Dr. Martin Luther King, his legacy, his relevance today. Again, this is the 54th anniversary of his martyrdom. He was assassinated on this day in Memphis, if you will, after delivering a speech the night before. In which he talked about being on the mountaintop. He said, I may not get there, but my people will get to the promised land. I happen to have worked with and through my association with Reverend Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Billy Cowles, who just recently passed away within the last few years. And Reverend Billy Cowles, he had dinner with hosted dinner with Dr. King and some close friends that evening, the evening before he was gunned down. He said that Dr. King preached the fear out of himself that evening in that speech, that historic speech, in which he, which we call the mountaintop speech. So give us your reflections and the relevance of King today, 212-209-2877. Also, the question of gentrification, a state of emergency without urgency. We are, again, having this major town hall meeting this evening, virtual town hall meeting. We hope that our WBAI audience here and across the country, because we are listened to across the country and across the world, for that matter. Gentrification is not only a big issue in the United States, it's a big issue wherever black people are. We're being pushed aside by market forces, displacing black people and black culture. And we need to address and redress it and repair it and change it so that we can create sustainable communities. Harlem is not quite the Harlem it once was. There's some vestiges, there's different pockets that are still there, but it's being chopped up. And it's not necessarily that you say people can't live where they want to live. That's not the issue. The question becomes, again, does the displacement of black people and black culture, people come in and they want to change the way you live and change what you do, exemplified by the drummers in Marcus Garvey Park, people petitioning to have them stop doing that when the neighbors, the community, had already accepted this as a weekly ritual which they embraced. And so, but it's much deeper than that in terms of the economic consequences. So give us a call at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877, to talk about that issue, if you will. And then there's the issue of reparations. Now, we, the National African American Reparations Commission, is pushing the position that if you were all blacks who were harmed in America, by America, should be repaired by America in America. It is an inclusive view of the eligibility for reparations. But there are some who say, no, it should be restricted only to American descendants of slavery when the period is 1619 ending in 1865. And we say that that is too narrow, too restrictive. And so that debate is going to be raging across the country as the California Task Force has recently, just as of last week, adopted this restrictive view by a very narrow vote of 5-4. But the conversation has been out there for a while, has been percolating. Who should get reparations? And in what forms? You can go to the IBW website, IBW21.org, IBW21.org, and you can see the position that the National African American Reparations Commission has taken on this position, on this vital question. So give us a call at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. You can get in right now. I left plenty of time. You have, at least 20 minutes or more, at least 20 minutes to get into this conversation. The phones are wide open for you to call, 212-209-2877. And once again, I urge you to go to the IBW website to sign up for and get the information on this major town hall meeting tonight. Gentrification, a state of emergency without urgency, but we're getting ready to turn up some heat. We're getting ready to make it more urgent. And, of course, your reflections on Dr. Martin Luther King, 55 years ago, his speech at Riverside Church. And you have heard it over and over again here at WBAI, because WBAI is always on it on these occasions. And, of course, unfortunately, this is the day he was martyred. He was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee, identifying with garbage workers, sanitation workers. I'm glad we changed that name from garbage workers to sanitation workers. And he was planning a poor people's campaign to, in fact, push forward the idea of an economic bill of rights that every human being in this society would have guaranteed income or a job, housing, health care, and education. That's where King was going. A radical vision of transformation in these United States of America. 212-209-2877. Get in line. Call us right now. Let's go right to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. Daryl McPherson, Bronx, New York.
Yes, how are you?
Thank you so much for taking my call, Dr. Daniels. Another name that I'd like to add to people who died on April 4th is Reverend Dr. Adam Clayton Powell.
Yes.
Jr. He also died on this date, and he passed more legislation in the United States Congress than any other congressman during a time in which he also was under threat of extinction in both communities. So I think he needs to be recognized. The other thing that I'd like to share
let me just stop you there. I thank you for reminding us of that. And to be honest about it, I was not aware that this was the date Reverend Congressman Adam Clayton Powell, truly one of the great, not only religious figures, one of the great political figures in the history of these United States of America. You hit it just right. He was a legislative engineer. He passed more legislation. The Great Society of Lyndon Johnson, all of that would not have been possible without the leadership of Adam Clayton Powell. So I just want to thank you, my brother, for reminding us of that. Go right ahead.
The other thing that I'd like to share with you is we need to raise the money for a new phone system at BAI because if you talk to General Manager Berthold Reimers, he'll tell you that there is a problem. For instance, calling in, it was almost a minute before even the phone rang. What I'd like to share with you is your organization, Institute of the Black World. You're right. It's a 501c3?
That's right.
All right. Similar to WBAI, which I raise money for all the time, I need you to look into Good Search as a way for people without capital to contribute to your organization. If you would register with, it's under Good Shop, which is a platform that you, if you have money, you can shop through that platform and give money to causes of your choice. But currently, we need everybody to go to use Good Search and put BAI or, I'm blowing the name of your organization again. Would you?
IBW, just IBW, it's okay.
Okay. IBW the 21st world. I mean, 21st. Anyway,
okay.
That's a way that we can empower ourselves. And if we then took all the 501c3s and we all search using each other as the cause of choice, we could literally raise millions of dollars. In the context, you get a penny a search. So you get a million searches, and it sounds like a lot until you think about how many times people throw out that other G word, and people then use that G engine. How did ABC become ABC? Through search.
Right.
So
Okay, my brother. Appreciate all of that, and really, really, really thank you so much for bringing back the memory of Reverend Congressman Adam Clayton Powell. Others can call us at 212-209-2877. Keep trying. If you're taking in a minute, just keep plugging away, plugging away, plugging away until you get up in here to have a conversation with the soapbox, with the professor on the soapbox. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. My thought on Dr. King was there was never really an investigation to see whether there was a conspiracy to assassinate him. It's ludicrous to think that this one fellow can follow him all the way across the country, get on about where he's at that time, and assassinate him. There was no real investigation into that. All they said was, it was a lone gunman that did. That's ludicrous. That's crazy.
Right.
You know, nobody believes that.
Well, I certainly don't. And you're right. There's never really been what I would term a credible investigation into the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, or for that matter, for Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz either, but we all have a sense of the danger, given the COINTEL program, that these two giants posed to the empire, that posed to these United States of America. So, again, quite important observations. Your thoughts on King's legacy, any part of his work that you particularly found compelling?
A young spirit at that time, and I still remember the March on Washington, and you know how we all gathered around the TV to listen to his speech, and how proud we was of him. And the sad too, there was no real, after his assassination, there was no real leader to step in to take his place.
Right. You know? Well, I guess what it reminds us of, that when you become the leader, you edge into the bullseye. So we need to talk about how we have collective leadership, so that if they take down one, they have to take down more than one in that regard. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your call. Others can call at 212-209-2877. The lines are open, so keep trying. Keep plugging away until you get through. I do hope that we will, if indeed that is the issue, get it shaped up, because I love engaging and giving the audience an opportunity to call in and to share perspectives. So sometimes we disagree, and that's fine, and sometimes we debate a little bit. That's fine as well, as long as it's constructive and positive. We love that and think that's something that is an important feature of WBAI, particularly with shows like Vantage Point, which I consider to be really a talk show in some respects. A radio activist oriented show. So 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. And once again, go to the IBW website for the town hall meeting this evening. I really, really, really urge you to go to IBW21.org. By the way, you'll find a tremendous amount of information there. But in this regard, there are two things I call your attention to. Town hall meeting tonight on gentrification, again hosted by you just heard the tremendously inspiring and informative work by the Honorable Roz J. Baraka, one of the most progressive mayors, if not the most progressive mayor, not only black, period, in these United States of America. The work that he's doing and the way in which he's engaging folk doesn't mean he didn't have his critics. There were some critics at the New Jersey Center Performing Arts. There was a small group of people out, you know, protesting something that they were not satisfied with, and that's fine. Now you have a right to voice your opinions and to change them. But I must say, it was overwhelming. If you look at the distance that Newark has traveled from where it was to where it is now, and the way in which it's happening with the engagement of the people, and it should be manifested with people becoming engaged. You become a part. Get out and make this happen. By your participation, 212-209-2877. But again, tonight we talk about gentrification. Newark is struggling successfully to counter gentrification. They have equity policies, inclusionary zoning. They have the state's only community land trust to create what's called social ownership, and to be able to make it affordable for renters as well. And this is a huge, huge problem. I might say that the Barons, Assemblyman and Councilman Barron in East New York, they have also been very, very successful at countering gentrification in East New York, because they don't tolerate it. You don't come up in East New York without agreeing to an affordable housing plan, and they don't mean market rate. They mean real affordability based on people's income and not some arbitrary formula that really means that people really still can't live in these neighborhoods. And so they have checked gentrification. It is probably the only place in New York that is not being gentrified. And that's East New York. And a big shout out to the Barons for that. 212-209-2877. But tonight you can... you'll be able to go, and you'll be able to listen to the participate in the town hall meeting. There'll be an opportunity for comments and questions. We're leaving space for that. Again, we have people coming in from Houston, Texas, Seattle, Washington, Los Angeles, the famed Crenshaw District, Newark, the president of the Essex County Urban League, Vivian Cox Frazier will be a representative. We're representing Newark in this conversation, but also we'll have a representative from Durham, and they are really catching it in Durham. Community just being eaten up there in Durham, North Carolina. So go to the website, IBW21.org, and you're able to sign up. The other issue is eligibility. Who should get reparations and in what forms? It's heating up as an issue. It's always been hot, but it's heating up. And we take a firm position. Again, our thematic reference is all black people who were harmed in America should be repaired by America in America. And that is not sitting well with some folks who want to restrict it just to, quote, the American descendants of slavery. And they may be well-intentioned, they may be well-meaning, but by definition, reparations is for enslavement, yes, but it is all the other legacies of enslavement, as documented by Dr. Claude Anderson in his seminal, highly informative book, Black Labor, White Wealth. The Homestead Act, which gave, I think, something like 160 acres of land to, it ended up being white folks. And then on a class basis, people were able to aggregate it, and they were able to get huge tracts of land for the railroads and universities and whatnot. We were denied that right, fought in the war. All of America's war, and yet in World War II, we were denied. Many of our vast majority of black people were denied the GI Bill. The suburbs were built with the Federal Housing Authority, Federal Housing Administration. Black folks, white folks got the loans. We didn't get the loans. Reparations is for all of that. Redlining. Evanston, Illinois is actually doing reparations. It's on the basis of redlining and disinvestment in our communities. Some of those people can trace their lineage back. And by the way, I don't know how you really trace it, but some of the people are able to trace, others are not. And so this is an issue that we really need to clarify and educate on. And I do know there's some people, frankly, who do have an attitude that, well, them Africans are coming over here taking our job, and them Jamaicans are coming over here, and West Indians and Caribbeans and whatever. You know, we can talk about it. We need to talk about it. I'm not interested in denying Marcus Garvey or his descendants, Dr. Julius Garvey, reparations, because he was not a direct descendant of American slavery, nor Malcolm X, you know, or his daughters and sons and daughters, or Congresswoman Yvette Clark, or Shirley Chisholm, or, I mean, these are all people who would not have been eligible. Or you remember Abner Louima, he was from Haiti. The police did not ask whether he was from Haiti when they assaulted him under the war on drugs. Nor was Amadou Diallo questioned about whether or not he was from Guinea. They just saw, as Malcolm said, a black man. We all catch hell, Malcolm said, for the same reason. We all catch hell because we are black people. So we are eager to have that conversation as we look at the possibility that H.R. 40 is about to become the law of the land. Reparations are, in fact, being awarded in Evanston, Illinois. And we hope that even in California, this decision will be changed to expand the definition so that all of the harms, all of the horrific harms inflicted on black people can be adjudicated and addressed and must be addressed in the name of our ancestors who are counting on us, calling on us, you know, who are crying out that reparations become a reality and not too long from now. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Again, we're waiting for other callers to join in. I hope you're not having complications getting in, because otherwise you just have to listen to me. And I don't like to filibuster. I mean, I can talk. I mean, I have no problem with that. But I would prefer to hear from our listening audience. And quite frankly, in the future, if we can't get people in. I'll just do all interviews and not leave time for this because I really, really don't want to be straining my vocal cords having to talk so much, particularly when tonight I've got to moderate this town hall meeting. I will be moderating the town hall meeting this evening that we're hosting, again, being hosted by the Honorable Raj J. Baraka, Mark Morial participating. It will be powerful and needed and urgent because we have got to mount a fight back on this issue. So again, on these two issues, you can go to the website. But we also are honoring or talking about the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. Do not forget that on this day he was assassinated in Memphis, but also on a more upbeat note, that it was on this day at Riverside Church that he delivered one of the most influential and iconic speeches in the history of these United States of America, Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break Silence, an incredibly powerful and impactful oration was delivered on that day. So again, go to the website, ibw21.org, ibw21.org, and you will be able to get the information on that form that begins in just a little while, 7 o'clock p.m., and those of you in Newark, go out and join the POP million-person rally and march for voting rights and economic justice and peace. And then you can come on back home and tune in to and get the town hall meeting as well. You can do both this evening, but certainly we want to support the work that the People's Organization for Progress is pushing forward. They're always out there organizing, mobilizing the people. One of the really, really powerful and important organizations all across the country. They have done it for years. And it's one of my favorite organizations, not only because I considered Larry Hamm a friend, but because he does effective organizing. He's supported by people who are committed to consistently organizing and moving a progressive agenda forward. So I guess we don't really have time for much more now, so I might as well just keep talking. 212-209-2877 didn't seem to work too well today, so I have to take that into my considerations because I do not intend to just be talking. One of the programs we want to take a look at coming up is some labor issues. Big victory for labor. Staten Island created, the workers at Amazon created their own union. And they have unionized. Oh, Amazon is having fits. They're saying, oh, but didn't we give you benefits and education and all these things? And you still want to? Yes, you still need to organize in order to keep them accountable. And most recently, we were in Selma. One of my dear friends, Baba Akili, went back to Birmingham. In fact, we met someone in Selma because they're also working to fighting to organize in Birmingham, Alabama. So I'm going to have someone on to talk about that, maybe bring Bill Fletcher in, one of our Dream Team members, also formerly with his own program at WPFW, but a tremendous organized labor and social justice activist and organizer over the years. So look forward to that. And then I think on the 18th, I've got to check the schedule to see when I'm preempted for this month or when they'll have a special fundraising drive. But we're looking at the 50th, I think it's the 50th anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking into the big leagues coming up. And so I'd like to talk about that. I'd like to have a special program on the life and legacy of Jackie Robinson, who was more than a baseball player. He was also a civil rights activist. He was protesting and organizing and whatnot. And so I think it would be great if we got somebody, maybe Herb Boyd will join me, some others, and we take an examination of the life and legacy of Jackie Robinson. So anyway, folks, those are things that we have to look forward to. Tonight, we are looking forward to a national town hall meeting sponsored by the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, a state of emergency without urgency. Go to the website, ibw21.org, and we'll see you at 7 o'clock sharp p.m., National Town Hall Meeting. And again here next week on Vantage Point. Smiles in the making.